Heads up, we are discussing the sexual abuse of children. On Friday nights, Father Ron Picken, a priest in Newcastle, invited schoolboys around to his presbytery, gave them cigarettes, fed them booze, and let them play a poker machine he kept there and let them keep their winnings. One of these boys, who Picken was instructing in the Catholic faith at the local high school, woke up drunk on the floor one night with the priest's penis in his mouth. The boy was 13. In 1969, that year, several times the priest assaulted him. His anger and shame have lasted a lifetime. When he finally took action against the Catholic Church, 50-something years down the track, he told the court he'd spent most of his life sad, angry, and anxious, feelings he'd dealt with by abusing alcohol and drugs. The courts know him as AA. He won the first round, lost the next, and then a fortnight ago won $336,000 in the High Court. To discuss the case, I'm joined by Judy Courton. AA was not one of her clients, but Dr. Courton has been a leading advocate for victims of institutional child sexual abuse for the last 15 years. Judy, welcome back to Late Night Live.
Thank you so much, David.
Judy, why go to court these days when there's a tribunal all set up to compensate victims?
Okay, so the National Redress Scheme is, I say, a farce. It's basically, I'd say, designed to protect the assets and properties of institutions. It has a cap of $150,000, but not many people will receive that at all. And in fact, with the National Redress Scheme, it was really based on the psychology of the 1950s. It says that unless a child was penetrated, something went into a hole somewhere, that they can only get $45,000. To get $100,000, there needs to have been penetration. To get the 150, there need to have been additional circumstances, such as, for example, a child in an orphanage, so they had no contact with the family and things like that. Certainly, the bar for evidence and proof is very, very low, but it's a shocking scheme. And if someone even accepts $30,000 from it, they have to sign away all future legal rights. In other words, they can never commence a claim in the courts against that institution.
How much do you reckon AA would have got if he'd gone there?
He might have got $95,000, potentially a little bit of money for counselling.
But he got 300 and something thousand in the courts.
He did get 300 and something thousand in the courts.
There's never been a problem suing the church if you can show that the church knew a priest was an abuser.
That's right.
So it's all about finding ways to hold the church responsible when they claim they didn't know.
Yes. It did leave us with a second legal hook where it's called a vicarious liability or an indirect liability. And for that, though, we have to show that the relationship between the offender and the institution was one of employment. And we discussed this at length last year from the High Court matter of Bird and DP.
Where the High Court held, miraculously really, that priests are not employees. Their relationship is with God, is that right? Not with the bishop? I might be making light of it there, but even though the church tells them where to live, what they're paid, what they do, et cetera, they're not employees. And that was a huge setback.
It was a huge setback. The High Court basically agreed with the church's argument, and the church has argued this forever, internationally, not just Australia, that priests are not employed. There is no official formal employment contract. And it did set back particularly victims and survivors of Catholic clergy abuse in Australia.
Because the courts elsewhere in the world, in Britain, Ireland and Canada, had all agreed, all come to the view that priests were employees. But along comes AA's case. Why does this case really matter?
With AA comes a whole new test, if you like, for the diocese, in this case, being held legally liable or legally responsible. So the test now, it's not so much we have to find fault with the diocese. What we have to do is to, or I'll put it another way, we have to find that they breached a non-delegable duty of care. What the hell does that mean? Anyway.
So there's been years and years of argument over this tiny legal point.
Years. That's why the history in Australia has been, well, compared to the international common law countries, somewhat stunted.
So what lawyers representing the victims of clerical abuse have been searching for is another pathway to show that under whatever name, the church was responsible for what a priest did.
That's correct.
And this time the context was a school.
This time in AA, the AA himself, he was 13 years of age. I think you mentioned that in your introduction. And Father Picken gave religious instruction lessons or religious instruction to the students at the high school. But what Picken did, he invited AA and another boy back to the parish to basically sexually assault them. So what the court looked at is not just an ordinary duty of care to prevent harm. It's a duty to ensure that reasonable care was taken to prevent injury or harm to the child. So a normal duty of care is a duty to prevent. This is more onerous. It's a duty to ensure that reasonable care was taken to prevent. So it's a duty which obliges the diocese in this case, the Catholic diocese, not merely to take reasonable care, but to ensure reasonable care was taken to avoid or prevent the risk of an injury to the child by the priest.
Now, this injury had to be reasonably foreseeable. Here we go again. On the very technical terms, but the technical terms matter. What was reasonably foreseeable? That Father Picken would put his penis in this boy's mouth?
So the bishop in the Diocese Maitland Newcastle didn't have to have knowledge that Picken might be an offender. The difference with AA and what makes something reasonably foreseeable, we don't necessarily, like in the past, have to prove that a diocese or a bishop had specific knowledge of a particular priest. From now on, we just have to show that a reasonable person, as such as the bishop, would foresee that Picken inviting a child to the presbytery might, not necessarily would, but might involve a real risk of harm. So it's a completely different test.
Much broader.
Much, much broader.
Much, much easier to prove. So the bishop doesn't even have to reasonably foresee the possibility of sexual abuse. All the bishop has to do is reasonably foresee the possibility of injury to the child. Injury of any kind, falling down the stairs. And therefore, no specific knowledge of the nature of the priest is required, just that a kid with adults might come to harm. That's all that the church has to now acknowledge.
Yes. So one of the first things to establish a non-delegable duty, the first thing we have to establish is that there was a relationship between the diocese or the bishop and AA.
So if he'd picked up AA in the street and taken him back to the presbytery and raped him, the diocese wouldn't be responsible for that because there was no relationship between the kid and the diocese. Where does the relationship come, Judy?
Firstly, the child has to be under the care or supervision or control of the priest. Well, we know AA was, because he taught, Picken taught AA in the high school religious instruction and took AA back to the presbytery. The child has to be in the position, in that position, as a result of Picken basically performing his priestly duties.
Now, the church has argued for years that putting a penis into a boy's mouth is not part of religious duties of a priest, but that argument has been completely wiped, right?
It has been completely wiped.
But there were still a couple of judges on the High Court who were holding out for the old view of things. But the majority of the High Court held that the church is responsible if they can reasonably foresee that harm might come to a child. And that pretty much makes the church responsible whenever a kid is in the care of a priest because of a relationship between the kid and the church.
Correct. And one of the up until AA was decided, there were certain categories of relationships that non-delegable duties applied to. That was a school and student, hospital and patient, and so on. And in AA, that type of relationship has been extended to a diocese and a child. So that itself, that too, is quite a progressive decision by the High Court.
We know the church will continue to fight these things, but the church is left with pretty much the only defence, it seems to me, is the priest picked this guy up in an alleyway. Otherwise, the church is going to have to be shelling out large sums of money to its victims.
Sure, and we haven't had one of these cases tested, of course, in the courts, and a lot will be argued. And there are many, many, many elements to the non-delegable duty getting up, as it were. So we have to wait and see. But I would argue that this test now in AA could well apply to a scoutmaster, to a person in the Salvation Army, to potentially a coach, an athletics coach, and things like that.
So
of
it's
course,
going to
all
be
this is, all this has to be tested, but potentially that's the case.
So it's potentially transformative.
Potentially.
And what was what is this going to do to your clients and the clients of firms like yours who represent the victims of clerical abuse?
Well, hopefully what it will do it is providing them with a further pathway to receive some proper bloody justice, you know. I mean, people have been denied justice forever. It wasn't until we had the Royal Commission and we got all these legislative reforms, and now those legislative reforms are being played out in the courts, but they must receive some accountability and justice. And someone asked me the other day, you know, well, what if this sends a diocese or a school or a church sends them broke? Well, I say, if it does, so be it. What's more important here? The assets and the properties of the church, or the lifelong consequences of the child that was sexually assaulted or raped? Not only the child, what about their family? What about their parents, their siblings, their partner, their children? The impacts of these crimes are horrific and they're very, very broad. So what's more important? Addressing those hideous crimes with some type of justice, never enough, or the diocese saving its property? I mean, it's a pretty much a no-brainer, I would say.
So it's closing in on the church and the churches.
And not before time, you know. I think this has to happen, and it has happened finally. Not through, you know, there's been so much work and campaigning and advocating. We thought once we had the Royal Commission, that would have fixed everything. We thought once we had the recommendations, that would have fixed everything. But no, the church does keep fighting, does keep taking things to the courts of appeal, including the High Court. And fortunately, survivor victims are coming back and they're not allowing that power and wealth of the church to continue to traumatise them and abuse them.
By the way, Judy, are you surprised sometimes that the church relies on the intricacies of ancient common law rather than the Bible to establish what it owes its victims?
It doesn't sadly surprise me at all. In fact, the fact that Bishop Byrd, for example, took DP to the High Court smacks of a concern only for assets. The pledges and the promises through the Royal Commission from the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, you know, we will be model litigants. We will put the interests of victims first. We will be compassionate. It's utter bullshit, absolute bullshit. The church and the way it's acted in these claims, they use the black letter of the law knowingly, wittingly, to cause further harm and further trauma for victim survivors. It's an appalling position, absolutely appalling position.
And just to explain, Byrd and DP, Byrd was Bishop Byrd, and that was the case in the High Court last year, which caused a good deal of grief across Australia. Judy, thank you for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thank you so much, David.
I've been talking to Dr. Judy Courton, who is the principal of the Melbourne law firm Judy Courton Legal and a longtime advocate for the victims of institutional child sexual abuse. This is Late Night Live.